Everything is changing right now. How we work, how we lead. And if you're a leader, you're probably feeling it. The uncertainty, the pressure, maybe even the exhaustion. I'm Richard Stokes, and this is Mojo Under Fire. This podcast is about those defining moments, the crucibles that either break leaders or forge them into the kind of magnetic leaders others really want to follow. When the old playbook stops working, when you realize you can't just work any harder, when something has to change, and that something is you. The last 5 years, I've been having hundreds of conversations about how people find and keep their mojo, that quality that makes you successful, energetic, and influential. But lately, these conversations have gone deeper because the challenges are bigger and the stakes are higher. So in this series, you're going to hear real stories from real leaders about their hardest moments, and how they, not just what happened, but the truth of what it felt like, the approaches that actually worked, and the wisdom they'd share with you if you were sitting across the desk from them. These are conversations that will give you something you can use, tools you can apply, perspective that might shift how you lead. Because the best leadership development doesn't come from theory, it comes from learning how someone else navigated the fire and came out stronger. Today's guest is Emma Stace. Emma helps teams make complicated things simpler. After years of improving services in the UK government, she works now at the Open University on strategy and digital change. She believes progress starts with listening, clear purpose, and small steps that add up. This is a conversation worth your time, and if it lands with you, do share with another leader who might need to hear it. Okay, let's dive in. Emma Stace, welcome to the Mojo Podcast. Wonderful to see you. How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm very good. I'm very excited to be here. You are guest number one of series 7. So really excited to get going again. Now you've got an amazing story to share today and really excited to get into that. So as I always have and always will start with, so your mojo today out of 10, where are you tracking right now?
I'm an 8. 8 this morning. Pretty good, actually. Did my yoga this morning. Did hot yoga from 6:30 to 7:30. That always sets me up for a good day. Family are happy. Job's great. Team is good. Those are the things that kind of keep my mojo flowing.
Right. So it's having, I get the sense of these elements in your life.
Yeah.
You know, the self-care, family, team, everything's in a good place. That lifts the mojo up.
Exactly that. Yeah.
Great. So 8 out of 10.
Yeah. Pretty good.
Yeah. And so you've given a bit of an insight to it, but that word mojo, and I always ask every guest this, what does that mean to you specifically?
Yeah, I think it means, for me, it's when your head and your heart are connected and you're in flow, like you're authentic and you're purposeful and you're moving forward. Like there are days when your energy can feel stuck and you can be frustrated and irritated. Those are sort of the low days. But I think the good days are when you feel like you got forward momentum and sort of your heart is happy, your head is clear, and you're purposeful and you're executing. So that's what good flow means for me.
Lovely. So mojo is flow and that head-heart connection. Yeah. I speak to a lot of people who very much trapped in the head and there's not a lot of connection going down to the body, let alone the heart.
Maybe we might talk about that.
I think maybe we'll get into that. Okay, so lovely. Love that. And just to give listeners a sense of you and the storyteller here, what would be good for people to understand about you before we dive into it today?
Wow. Well, probably first of all, that I'm wholly imperfect before we start to talk about leadership. It's always kind of like, I don't want to sit on our soapbox today and talk about leadership in a way that isn't authentic to me. And I think leadership comes with a lot of humility. And I know we'll get into it, but in the pre-conversation we were sharing, it's about the challenges that you've overcome and the resilience and the passion to keep going. So that's really important to me. In terms of myself, I grew up overseas, spent a lot of my life overseas, my working life, worked in Australia, worked in South Africa, and have been in the UK now, settled for about 15 years. I'm married, got 3 gorgeous children. So family life and friendships are all really super important to me, as well as kind of having the ability to fulfill my work ambitions. Balancing all of that over the past 30 years has been the path that I suppose many of us as parents and women in particular have to strike a balance on. So all of that's in the mix when we're talking about leadership today.
And when people meet you, experience you, maybe it is in the work context as a leader.
Yeah.
How do they experience you now?
Well, that's a really hard question, isn't it, to answer, because everyone's experience of leaders are different, I think. So for me, it's about the relationship. So some people might experience me as passionate and supportive and challenging in equal measure. Some people might experience me as frustrating. I don't know. I mean, I think it's like you are in relationship with people all the time. And so it's really hard to say I'm just this type of leader or this is how people experience me, because the truth is in the singularity of the relationship with an individual.
So it's, I get that. So it's you know, we're all giving meaning to the moment we're in, right? Creating that experience. And I also get a sense, a little bit, maybe we're teasing out there, you know, leadership is situational and you'll bring a different leadership style to each moment and each person. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think so. I think leadership is about being in relationship with other people. And yeah, your style has to flex depending on the person that you're in relationship with. And that changes whether you're talking to a peer or a team member or a board member or a chairperson. You're flexing your style all the time because you're managing their expectations of you and who they think you are, as well as managing what the purpose of your shared relationship is in relationship to the work. So, yeah, I think it's really hard to say this is who I am at work, because I think it changes. And as we just talked about earlier, in terms of the relationship, the relationship with you have with yourself and your own energy. So I can have a good day at work and I have a bad day at work.
Well, say more about that, you know, that relationship with yourself as a leader.
Yeah. So I once had this great mentor who taught me that you are the energy that you bring to work. And I don't think you can underestimate that. So if you wake up in the morning feeling a bit frustrated and a bit stuck, you're going to bring that to your work, right? You're going to come in feeling frustrated and stuck. And guess what? Other people are going to be frustrating. Whereas you come in feeling open and curious and energetic, that's how other people are going to experience you. And that's how you're going to solve your day. So for me, what leadership is all about the energy that you bring. Are you being positive? Are you listening? Are you helping? Are you aiding? Or are you getting in your own way when it comes to trying to achieve the things that you want to achieve? And so, you know, leadership is about facing yourself in the mirror every day and kind of going, what energy am I going to bring this morning to the team? And I have a really great relationship with my own team that I've developed over the past 3 years, where I can say to them, am I being helpful? Am I helping at this point? And they can say, no, you're not. Or I can say, so it's constantly getting that feedback of how you're showing up with others. So it's not about being right and it's not about the hierarchy. It's about the energy that you're bringing and whether you're helping move something forward with purpose.
A very courageous style of leadership, in a way. If you're open enough to say, am I being of use? Am I being of help? Am I being of value? Which is obviously a big question for all of us.
Yeah.
And actually putting that to the team, and you've got the openness, vulnerability to do that. Yeah. Sounds really courageous.
Yeah. I think we can come a little bit to the role of leadership and how a leader builds a team. But I think as a leader, you should be in relationship with your team. And yes, there's a hierarchy there in terms of reporting lines, but I'm in service to making my team as effective as possible. And so that doesn't mean I'm not challenging and can't make some hard decisions. And we might be in conflict with each other for a short space of time, but it means I do want feedback on how I'm showing up for them and whether or not I'm helping them.
Mm. So in terms of, the theme for this series is, you know, mojo under fire. When we go through those crucible moments of challenge and crisis and change. So here's you now leading this very courageous, open, lots of humility. Has it always been this way, Emma, or has it been different?
Richard, we go back 30 years or so. You know it hasn't always been this way. I was pretty messy at university, and I was pretty messy in my 20s. And what I mean by that is I didn't really know who I was. I didn't really know what I valued. I sort of bounced around a lot. I ended up in South Africa, married to an individual, had a child, and then ended up getting divorced and coming back to England as a sort of 33-year-old with a single child, having relocated back from pretty much everything I knew, my home and my work. And I remember my mother on the kitchen table with her head in her hands going, "Oh no!" So I haven't always been certain of who I am. I haven't always been confident in my abilities. I haven't always made great choices. But I would say that that point of the divorce in my early 30s, and anyone who has been divorced and has been divorced with children in particular will know how painful that is, I think is the first time I stepped into my own leadership. And by that, I mean, I think it was the first moment in my life where I took full accountability for myself. And I think leadership is about taking accountability for yourself, for your actions, for your team's actions as well. And stepping forward with purpose. And I think that for me was kind of the crucible of my leadership journey. I don't think before I saw myself as a leader, but I think when I took that very difficult, very hard decision, that's when I came into my own leadership.
And the decision to leave South Africa, relocate to the UK, so would change everything.
Be a single mother.
Right. Wow. And yeah. That taking a sense of taking control or seizing that moment, that was your turning point.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say that was the moment where I stepped into my own leadership. And I suppose I discovered about myself in those hard times that I'm more resilient than I thought I was, a little stronger than I believed myself to be, pretty certain about what I value and who I wanted to be and how I wanted to move through the world. And I don't think I'd ever hit that. I don't think I'd ever have hit that moment if I hadn't had a child and I hadn't had that purpose of, I want to move forward in a different way than the path I'm on. And it wasn't about, you know, often in these situations, it wasn't about blaming anyone, but it was about me taking control of what I wanted for myself. And I think control and that level of accountability was kind of, for me, the first crucible where I went, I now exercise more self-leadership than I did before. And I think leadership is about, as we talked earlier, it's about the energy you bring and how you show up. And so you need to know yourself and be able to manage yourself so you bring the best version of yourself forward.
Yeah. And, you know, I think it's often said change comes from one or two places, inspiration or desperation.
Yeah.
And in neither's, I don't think it's a right or wrong. It's just a fact of life. They'll come from one of those places. And it sounds like something of the latter.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I mean, I always think, and, you know, someone once said to me, leadership is not like when the wind is in your face. That's easy. Right? It's easy to move through life. Sorry, when the wind is in your back, that's easy to move through life when everything's working in your favor. I think it's leadership for me is who you are when the chips are down and the wind is in your face and you've got to make some tough decisions. That's when leadership and courage, those values really come to the surface.
Mm. And as you did, found out a huge amount about yourself, you know, that confidence, that resilience. Yeah. I am more than maybe I gave myself credit for before this particular crucible that I stepped into.
Yeah, for sure. So not that I recommend getting divorced and being a single mother for a period of time, but for me, it was definitely a turning point in my leadership trajectory.
Yeah. And so sort of casting back post that, how did you then start showing up as a leader that was different to before, that maybe more uncertain Emma before and then after?
Yeah, I think if I'm speaking openly, maybe with more ambition. I mean, I was a single mum, so I was going to go out and earn my own money and be independent. So definitely more ambition, more purpose in terms of where I wanted to go. So probably a bit more far-sighted and making more strategic decisions about my career. Beforehand, I'd worked a lot in television and done a lot of late nights, and like, and now I was like, I'm going to get a serious job in a serious company and do serious work. And not that television isn't serious work, and I miss the creativity of the work in my 20s. But, you know, I was much more intentional and purposeful about charting my career path, and more ambitious and clear-sighted about what I wanted to achieve for myself and also to be able to provide for my then very young son. So yeah, it definitely made me a bit more strategic in who I was going to work with and for, and what that work-life balance needed to look like.
Yeah, I was going to ask the importance of having that sense of more of a strategy for this thing called life or career, and that allowed you, these are the people I want to work with. And was it a case of, did you understand things like maybe your values at that point? I know, you know, I do a lot of work with people around values.
But yeah.
Do you have a sense of what they were then?
Yeah, I think increasingly. I think, I mean, I think I've always been drawn to public service. So it was very much, you know, kind of I want to work in organisations that do good or whose purpose is about kind of making people's lives better. And I think that really probably came to the fore at the same time. Actually, I haven't thought about that. But yeah, I think I got a little bit more purposeful and a bit more value-based in terms of who I wanted to be with. And I would also say that I learned to separate work and life, because when you are working and you have a young son to get home to, you can't go to the dinners, you can't go to the parties, you can't make best friends with your work colleagues. And I just got a lot clearer about that's work life and this is home life. Whereas I think in your 20s, those things sort of rub along together, don't they? And
like, it all mixes and merges.
Yeah. And I think I realized how much time I wasted at work just hanging out. But yeah, I think I got a lot more client-sighted, more ambitious, and probably more focused at work than I've been before.
Yeah. So those boundaries were in place. There's absolute clarity about this is what I'm going to do, this is what I'm not going to do. I think often people do struggle with that, the decisions, those micro decisions almost daily. Is it a yes or a no? And I'm getting a sense of here's a yes and here's a hard no.
Yeah.
I don't want to, or I can't do that.
I just can't do that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, that was the big difference. And then I would say the other big difference is I probably, you know, I'd probably learnt some humility. That's probably where my humility comes from, which is, you know, I was moving back in with my parents as a single mum in my early 30s when my friends were all moving out of home and getting married. I was like, something out here for me. So I think I learned a degree of humility that, you know, life is precarious, and you need to move through it with a degree of humility.
Because you mentioned that right up front, that sense of, I think, humility being a key to your leadership style, and going through that moment of time of, oh, look, this isn't where I expected to be. How has life put me here?
Yeah.
And then I think you've got two choices with that. You know, there's an acceptance or a fight against.
Yeah.
And so, again, sort of back into sort of your career arc at this point, what were you starting to notice again that was different, or any other challenges that were, because we talked about one particular moment of mojo crisis. Has it been plain sailing since then? Has it been wind behind?
No.
What else have you experienced?
Well, I think just in preparing for this discussion, I think it was interesting. You talked about inspiration versus desperation. I would say my story has been 70% desperation, 30% inspiration. And I think I probably would fast forward to another time in my life where I was relocated now in Australia, remarried, a young child. We were all relocated to Australia, and I took a job as a chief operating officer in an organization I didn't know very well. And when I stepped into it, let's just say that the organization had a crisis, like a real crisis in terms of whether the organization would survive this crisis. And now I found myself in the position of sort of being responsible for the organization and its people at that time. And I probably met a man called Marty Govan, who was the Australian chair of the organization that I was working for. And he saw me working unbelievably hard, doing all the things to move the organization forward. And I had one seminal moment where he took me out for lunch and he looked at me and he said, "You are not the hero of this story. You need to build the team around you who can help this situation move forward," right? And I think, you know, for all the discussion that we just had about humility, I was still holding on to this notion of leader as the hero. And I remember he told me to go home and not come back into the office until Monday. I can't remember what day it was. But the idea of sort of letting go of the work, which I was holding on so tightly, seemed impossible. But I did as I was directed, took a few days off, went for lots of long walks, and then came back in on Monday morning and started to build a team. So rather than do the work myself, I made some difficult decisions around hiring, hired the people, tried not to do everything in one day, set out a one-year plan. And then when I left the organization 2.5 years later, I think the proudest kind of moment was they didn't need another me. They had the team around that took the work forward. And I think, again, another tough lesson, which is leadership is about building capability and leadership in others. It's not about being perfect. It's not about doing all the work. It's not about having the right answers. It's about creating the team, asking the right questions, and then motivating, inspiring, challenging that team to move forward. I think for me, leadership is teamwork. It's about building leadership in others, and it's about working with a team and learning from that team. You know, I have a lot to learn always. I'm always curious and trying to surround myself with people who are much brighter and better and more capable than me as specialists in their areas. I think it's just a perpetual journey, that leadership journey, which is constantly find things out still that surprise you about yourself. And there are still moments where you look in the mirror and see some uncomfortable truths, which you have to kind of go on, I'm doing that thing again. I need to stop doing that, or I need to do more of this. But I would say that was also another kind of seminal moment of, I can't scale myself, so I have to find a way to scale a team. Does that make sense?
Completely. And thank you for sharing that, you know, maybe a second moment of crisis. And I think for me, the importance there of that mentor, for want of a better word, coming in and just having that from I'm getting from a real sense of kindness.
Yeah.
But look, you're not the hero in this story. That's powerful.
Yeah. That's really powerful. It was like one of those moments that really pulled me up. You know, like,
yeah.
And I suppose, if I look back on it, you know, the divorce was about me leading myself forward. This was the moment where kind of I moved past that and created the team around me and moved forward. I would say, really working on team and what a good team looks like, and being your role as leader to be in service to that team. It's a really important part of my work and part of my leadership journey.
Right.
I'd like to have worked for myself in my early 30s.
Well, isn't that a great question though? Would you want to work for you at various points? And there you go. Yeah. At that point, you were like,
I think I would have been very directive, like, go and do these things. I wouldn't want to work for me in my 30s, no.
Yeah. I was getting a sense of that might have been that style, that directive, pace setting kind of style. Yeah. And you know, I do a lot of work around things like the drama triangle. And in there, I get a sense of you as the rescuer. I will rescue everybody here. I mean, your mentor used the word hero, could have been rescuer.
Yes.
And often that is almost, and I'm not directing this at you, but when we're in that rescuer mode, it's the most arrogant position because no one else can solve this, only me.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think we've all probably been there, and it takes something, I think, to change that way of thinking, that belief system.
Yeah.
And it sounds like that really switched your leadership around.
Yeah. But I would say you still have to be mindful all the time.
Yeah, again.
You know, it's kind of, and that's what I mean by it's never done, is it? Because, like, you know, I'm a fiery red on the scale of I'll come in and I'll say, I know what to do, let's do this. And then, you know, that takes power away from others. It doesn't invite the conversation. It doesn't build the team. It doesn't build a shared sense of understanding. Yeah. So I think you've just got to keep a watchful eye on those aspects of your personality that can come through.
How do you, what helps you with that specifically, that kind of, you know, that very clear setting of intention and checking in with yourself? That's what I get from that.
Yeah.
It's like, I might go very red here. And I know I don't think that's the way to go. So what helps you with that check-in?
I mean, I think sort of slowing down, I think, kind of it's okay. You know, I kind of feel like, and this, you know, I'm an impatient person who has suffered from anxiety, and that gives me a sort of sense of I've got to keep moving forward. And so sometimes I think it's the hardest work is just sitting with the discomfort and kind of going, I actually don't know what to do next. I'm actually not sure how to move forward. And I think it's just practice. I've just learned to slow down. The yoga, I mean, we talked about the yoga at the beginning. That super helps me. That is kind of my go-to. It just slows me down, takes away that anxiety to move to action too quickly. There's this lovely Rumi quote, which is your power exists between action and reaction. And sometimes we lose our power when we react too quickly to the incoming, right? We're impulsive, we move too fast. And actually just slowing down and observing and watching and then moving decisively forward. That's something I'd love to be like really good at. That's kind of what I'm practicing. I wouldn't say I'm perfect at it, but I really try and sort of move forward more intentionally. And that's kind of, it's just a continuous practice of knowing when to step in and when to step back, knowing when to just stay curious and listen before you move to action. Yeah. So it's a bit of an art, really, I think, or it's a muscle or a practice that you learn over time. And then I think, you know, it's really important to have people around you that can give you feedback, you know. It's really important to have people around you who can say, whoa, that's not helping.
And so this, you know, okay, let's follow that thread a bit. So you've learned to slow down. And I always think that practice, you want to slow down your mind, you've got to slow down your body first.
Yeah.
Because the mind will whirl, as you described. I want to get this done. So the yoga, slow the body down, practice it. How have you set yourself up then? And maybe this is with whether previous team or current team, to really invite and allow that feedback loop to happen. Because, you know, I work with a lot of people in leadership development, and we talk about, you know, feedback techniques, the giving and receiving of feedback. And what I often hear is, this is all well and good, Richard, I'm enjoying
it. All feedback is good feedback.
All feedback is good feedback. But my boss will not take feedback. I've tried, and just not open to it. So you're a boss.
Yeah.
How do you set that up and create that, whether it's a safety with the team, an expectation around feedback? Let's pull that thread a bit.
Great question. I think you have to, I think you have to really work on inviting it and making it safe for people specifically who report into you to offer that feedback, because that's quite high stakes, isn't it? Like sort of saying to your boss, I don't agree with you, or what you're doing is not helping me. Those are pretty high stakes conversations for people to have with the boss. I can only say that I'll just have to roll it a little bit back in the sense of when I started in my current role, I sent a little questionnaire to each team member before I started. What do you think we want to work on together? What would you like me to bring that you'd like me to start to really focus on? And to each of their credit, they all said, we're all doing our own individual thing, but we're not operating as a team. And so we really want to work on becoming a team. And we got a team coach in for like a year who worked with us quarterly. We contracted at the beginning what a team, why that was important to develop teamwork and why it's important that we individually commit the time to the team coaching. That developed relationships. You know, it wasn't work, it was the developing of the relationships between each other. And I think within that environment with them, we started to give each other feedback. So it's not just a one way, I'm giving you feedback, they're also giving each other feedback. And we've shared some really powerful moments where we kind of create the environment in which we can do that for one another, which is, you know, you're at your best when you bring X, and do more of that. And the thing that you might need to watch is Y, because when you step into that space, it sort of detracts from your power. So I think feedback, that kind of feedback works, the radical candor feedback works on the premise that the person who is giving you the feedback has your best intentions at heart, wants the best for you. And I think so often in the workplace, we can get feedback from people and we're like, yeah, but they're not really interested in me and my development. And so I think you've got to have a high degree of trust in order to facilitate that type of feedback. And it takes time. It takes time. So I don't think you don't just turn up and go, I've got some feedback for you. That doesn't work.
So, I mean, so much in there, right? Even as you started it off, I, you know, you sent a questionnaire to the team.
Yeah.
Literally, as you started, this was as you came
before
into the
before I started.
Role. Before you started.
Yeah.
And because, you know, I don't hear that sort of story that often, about a leader coming in and saying, I want to hear from everybody and this is how we're going to do it. And had that idea, had you used that before? Or you'd read that somewhere and thought, you know what, I'm going to give this a go.
I don't know why I did that. It's a good question. I suppose I wanted to know them and I wanted to be, you know, talking about intentionality. I wanted to be really, I know I was joining a really complex organization. I know I was joining a team that had been through some difficult times. I wanted to step into my new role quite intentionally in relationship with them. And I suppose I kind of thought, let's give it a go and let's have an experiment. And I think the thing that I'm really happy to run an experiment. Like I keep saying, I'm always happy to kind of go, let's try this. And if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. I think my team would say, less experiments. Let's just stay on one path and keep going. But I'm always ready to give something a go. And I thought, and that, you know, we talk about inspiration. That really inspired me joining them and them saying, can you help us become more of a team? Well, that was a really inspiring invitation straight off the bat. And it allowed us to accelerate quite quickly as individuals and as a team. And, you know, I think now we can move very quickly to conflict and through conflict.
Because you've established that trust, as you say, over time, it's not a one and done and it's a continuation. Yeah. And I also get a sense of there was this, you know, a joint commitment. We want to be team. Okay, yes. So how do we do that and how do we all commit to it? Not just the leader saying, right, let's play nicely as a team now and everyone going in their directions. And then this sense of trust over time. So tell me a bit about, this moving through conflict and I'm getting a sense of embracing it as a team and understanding we can do this.
Yeah.
Because it maybe brings out the best in our work. Tell me some about.
Do you know Lindsay Model?
I am aware of Lencioni's model. Not everyone listening, maybe, but
maybe we can drop a link into, there's a website which sort of links it all out. But that was our framework. And I think it's a really simple model. And it starts with relationship trust at the bottom, and it moves up to results at the top. And it talks about what I find really fascinating is it talks about that conflict creates commitment, right? So if everyone just listens to the leader and everyone nods and agrees and then goes out the room, that's not commitment. That's just we've been told what to do and we're going to go and do it because someone told us to do it. Or we won't do it and we'll just be passive aggressive and not do the thing that we agreed to in the room. Classic work behavior. But actually, conflict creates commitment. And we know that to be true in our relationships, don't we? That in our day-to-day relationships with those that we love most, we can have those little moments of conflict and we move through them and the world doesn't fall over. So it's about creating, you know, when we say conflict at work, it makes it feel combative or antagonistic. Yes. I don't mean that type of conflict. I mean, do I understand clearly what it is that you're saying? Now that I've understood it clearly, do I agree with you? And if not, why not? And then can we come to an agreement on the way forward, having aired all of the views, and now we're committed as a team and we're moving forward? So it's about sort of, if you like, creating the environment in which you can have the discussion. You can, people have the psychological safety to voice their view and bring their view. And then we make a decision and then we move. And that's how great teams drive results, which is not about, you know, sometimes we think about team as imperfect harmony with each other. I think that's a false expectation. I think teams naturally have friction in them, but it's important that that friction is harnessed to be productive rather than a negative force. And it's about surfacing it in a way that we all want the same outcome, but how we get there, we might have to make some decisions along the way that are not always easy ones to make.
Yeah. And I love that, not least because it puts, you know, a piece of theory from a book into practice and absolutely see how it ladders up. And, you know, also when I present it and the word conflict does have a bit of a red flag for people. You know, I can't do conflict at work, but and the way you describe it there is absolutely spot on in terms of it's a discussion, it's a debate, and you need to have the debate, the space for it, to then move up to, you know, as you said, commitment. And I think then we go to accountability. We're all holding each other accountable, right, for this decision that we made.
Yeah.
Whether we agree with it or not,
we're
moving because we've committed.
Yeah.
And then you can be attentive to results, because obviously the flip, as Lynchian is always, we're inattentive. We've gone our own separate ways, and look what happens to results, bottom line, sales, whatever you might be measuring as a key result. So I love that it's, you know, here's something from some leadership theory that you've absolutely put into practice that sounds like it's landed really well over several years.
Yeah, I think we've worked on it really, really well. And what I see now actually is we don't need to do the trust and relationship stuff. We're actually all now focused on the results, but it's taken 3 years to get there. And I think that's the other thing is that, you know, leadership is not, you know, maybe teams move fast, people move in and out of teams quickly now. You know, what's the average tenure of a CDIO? Chief Digital Information Officer is less than 3 years. Mm. You know, these things take time. I think there's this pressure on results, but, you know, I think it takes time to build the team and the relationships and get to that point where you really start to become more high performing than just a group of individuals.
And what would be your, you know, there's so much wisdom already in this episode, but what would be your wisdom, your advice maybe to a leader in a similar position to you who's coming in, maybe new to team, but might feel, I haven't got 3 years to turn this around.
Yeah.
As you said, you know, the average lifespan, you know, 2.5-3 years and various CMOs similar. What would be your top tip for how to approach that kind of situation?
Yeah. Well, you kind of need to accelerate through the work that I've just talked about. Mm-hmm. And I think it is about, you know, Lencioni, the model of Lencioni isn't linear. It's not you do this and then you do this and you do this. It's circular. So I think you probably need to make a very quick judgment on what is the team that you have, how do you build that team as quickly as possible, and how do you keep moving through those points. But yeah, it's difficult, and it's even more difficult when we're all in our little boxes, sitting in our homes, kind of having Teams calls with each other. Like a lot of the work that we've done at the beginning was face to face in a room, getting to
know. Right, and you've seen a real difference in the ability, as you know, where you started this conversation. It's about relationship, being in relationship with other, and those relationships are, I don't know, harder to create for you across the screens.
Yeah, for sure. Mm. Don't you think? Like just seeing someone in their full, like you talked earlier about being in your body and being in your head. Mm. It's we only see each other's heads. like what's going on with this person? There's so much emotional information we lose out on when we're just talking with our heads.
Yeah, that's it. And how do you, I mean, what's your situation with where you work now? Is it fully remote or is it hybrid? What's the kind of setup?
Yeah, well, we're a hybrid organization. I think the natural by default post-COVID is we work from home, but we have to be very intentional about when we come together. And so when we do come together, I try and make it as intentional as possible, in the sense of we're not doing transactional work, we're working on complex problems, or we're working on a relationship, or we're spending time together as human beings.
So I get right. So you're very clear when we're all in on whatever day of the week, this is the sort of thing that would be higher value for us to focus on than
we're not sitting on screens typing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it sounds so obvious, but yet I go into quite a few organizations and I still see people who, when they're in the office, on screens with other people on screens somewhere else, and you think there's a missed opportunity here.
Yeah.
Surely, in terms of that human to human interaction, which I totally agree with you, is different when we're in the room.
I had this wonderful pre-COVID speaker come and give a futurist come and give a talk just before COVID, literally 2 days before lockdown. I was working in a government department at the time, and he talked about how important it is in this fast moving dynamic world that we're in to optimize for serendipity, like those moments of creativity that come from little kind of discussions that you didn't think you were going to have, but you end up happening. And that's where inspiration comes for me personally, is bumping into someone, being inspired by the shared energy. Great, let's do that. We could do that. Let's get going. And that's harder to come by when we're all locked in screens.
Yeah. So keeping open, a sense of an openness and energy up when we are together, looking out for those kind of opportunities, and more of the I'm going to draw as much wisdom and advice out of you as possible. People listening who might be, you know, you've been through, you've talked to a couple of those crucible moments. There may be more experience, but what advice would you give to a leader who's in that right now? Be it a personal challenge, be it the professional challenge of stepping into a new team and it's kind of crisis mode. What advice would you give?
What advice would I give? It will pass. Really project through how you want to come out of it at the end, like what's important to you. You know, that classic wisdom of what can you control and be responsible for versus what is completely outside of your control and you can't be responsible for. And keep your feet grounded and slow your breath and move forward intentionally, or as intentionally as you can.
I love that.
Easy to say, hard to do. And surround yourself by people who, you know, it's okay. I think, you know, it's okay as a leader to say, I need some help. I don't actually know what to do next. What do you think? And take some soundings. You know, I find you need to invite people. When I'm under pressure, I want to solve it all myself. But actually what I have found is by sharing a problem, you invite different perspectives, and that can be really, really helpful.
Yeah. And look at that. That's almost, I get that sense of battling an instinct of I'll go into my cave and solve it. Actually, yeah. I know what I need to do because I've been here before. I need to open up.
Yeah.
I need to be vulnerable. I need to look for those, so those good people who are around me, who I trust.
You know, I can go and say, what do I do? How do I move forward?
Mm.
How am I being? Can I, what can I do better? What do I need to stop doing? I love that expression. What do you need to do more of, and what do you need to stop doing?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, making it, boiling it down to this, those simple questions to yourself, I think it can be really, almost self-coaching.
Yeah. And, you know, I have a work coach now who I spend a lot of time with, constantly working through my own energy, the energy I'm bringing to the team, some of the challenges that I'm facing. I find that really super important. Because, you know, the more senior you get in an organization, the more lonely it becomes. Sometimes you need to just sit with someone and kind of go, what's going on here? Let's unpack it. I find that really, really helpful.
Yeah. I mean, great to hear. And I just before you were talking about the loneliness of leadership, that was the thought that was coming to mind for me, that we go, maybe if it's a hierarchy, the further we go up, the further we are away from those people who can give us the feedback, who we can bounce ideas off. Yeah. And it takes a real vulnerability to ask, I think sometimes internally, am I doing the right thing? Because we may have, you know, for the right or wrong reasons, a fear around, what does that mean if I don't have the answers right now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, as a leader, you should be, I mean, should, there's a great word. I'm in relationship with my team, but obviously at the end of the day, I'm the one who's making the tough decisions and providing direction and way forward. So, you know, that's not their role. That's my role. That's for me to bring. So it's important that I give myself the time and space in order to bring that as best I can.
Yeah, love it. Yeah. And now a sort of final-ish kind of question. Looking forward, what's next for you? Where do you want to, you know, essentially take all this amazing leadership experience, skills and strengths that you've got? Where would you like to project that next?
Wow, well, I'm really busy in my current role. So, like, I'm very excited about the work that I'm doing at the moment. I love my team. I love the opportunities in front of us. So really, for me, it's about delivering that value. And then I suppose in terms of moving forward, I mean, I'm in this world where AI is dominating the conversation and is the next great technology thing that is going to solve lots of complex problems. And so I suppose if I have any projecting forward, it's to keep the human at the center of all those conversations. You know, kind of work is still, I think, about becoming more human and more sense making and more relationships as AI begins to take over so much of sort of the mundane work that some of us, our mundane work. But I think there's a real challenge in the conversations that I see where AI is going to do everything. It's like, I don't believe that to be true. And actually, I think human qualities and the human art of sense making and slowing down and creating teams and purpose in a way needs to be elevated in the conversation. So that's kind of where I would like to spend time and energy, making sure that those conversations happen.
Love it. I love that take on, you know, the enhancement from AI rather than the, you know, there's a lot of fear, a lot of what does it mean for me? But I think crystallizing it like you have just then, it can enhance, but come back to the human energy, the human spirit. That's how, you know, teams and
AIs can't make sense of organizations. I've yet to see anything that says it's going to make work simpler. In fact, it sort of seems to make work even faster. Which is going to be a challenge for all of us, isn't it, in terms of staying connected to each other.
Yeah, well, let's focus on that. Emma, thank you so much for joining the Mojo podcast today. First one in our new series, amazing wisdom, advice. Thank you for bringing your full self into the episode. And thank you so much.
Thanks for having me. And I look forward to listening to your other guests.
Well, they'll be coming soon. And so stay tuned and see you soon.
All right. Take care. Bye.